This is Dan Austin, recording Mr. Chester Hoff, age 101 in Daytona Beach, Florida. This is for the Baseball Hall of Fame, and it is Saturday, November the 2nd, 1991. And I am talking with Mr. Chester Hoff, age 101, who played for the old New York Yankees before World War I when they were called the New York Highlanders. Is that right, Mr. Hoff?
That is true.
Okay. And you graciously said that you would do this recording, this interview, for the Baseball Hall of Fame, but you're only going to do part one.
That's all I can do.
That's all you can we can take care of, and that's all we will do today. And I know so many people have interviewed you, and I think that you feel like...
I'm all the time I come in here now. I've been busy since last Christmas, pretty the whole year now, on this baseball stuff.
I guess I see that you got a letter from President Bush.
I have a... is that Donna recording?
Uh-huh.
I have a special a gold seal letter for my birthday from George Bush and his wife up there. You can see it up there?
Yes, I do see it on the wall.
Yeah.
And... So
that,
you were
is that going on?
Uh huh. Yeah, we're talking about that.
You're on there now.
And you have two daughters.
I have two daughters.
And their names are?
One's Eva and one's Jane.
Uh huh. And they live in Florida.
And they're both living here in Florida now.
And you got grandchildren that live all over America. One in Alaska.
Well, I got a grandson in Alaska, and I got a granddaughter down in Missouri.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
You have any great-grandchildren?
I got great-grandchildren in Missouri and Alaska.
And great-great-grandchildren?
Oh, yeah. I have, up in Maryland, I have a great-granddaughter who was just born July 4th last year, on the 4th of July.
On 4th of July. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, again, I want to thank you on behalf of the Baseball Hall of Fame for sharing some of your memories, because this will go into the archives. And I will make copies of this tape for you and your daughters.
Yeah.
If they would like it, or for your grandchildren.
Yeah.
If they would like to have copies of this recording as well.
They would enjoy it, yeah.
Because unlike other people interviewing you, and you've been very busy the past few months, I doubt if your children have been able to get a copy of this.
My children's up in the picture there.
Okay. But we want them to have a copy of this interview.
Yeah.
And I'll make copies and send them to you so that you can give them to your daughters.
When they come here, I'll give it to my daughter.
Okay, so this is very special for them as well.
This is very special,
Okay. Where were you born, Mr. Hoff?
I was born in Austin, New York.
Mm-hmm.
In
1891.
Okay. Yeah. May 8th, 1891.
Okay. And you say you would want to share part one of some of your baseball memories.
You want me? I'll tell you, yeah. You want to hear it now?
Please.
This is part one. This is the beginning of my baseball career, which I never knew about. So my brother Herb and I were sitting at the dinner table one night, and we was talking about this and that. This is going to be a little boring for a while.
No, it's not.
So, after we got through talking there, he said, how'd you like to have a little catch? Do you understand baseball? Do we have a little catch with the baseball, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I said, I'd like to go up. I didn't have any intention of playing baseball. So, I didn't know what he was driving at. I was grown, getting bigger, you know. I was out of school, getting bigger, so now. I didn't know what he was doing. I went up with him. We had a catch for about 15 minutes. And that was all right. We come back, and he didn't say nothing. So in a couple of days, he came back again, and the same thing happened. We were sitting at the dinner table, and he said, how'd you like to go up and have a catch again? Oh, I said, all right, I'll go up a while. So we went up and had a catch for about 15 minutes. So he went away, and he came back on a Saturday. He says, we have a big game up in Croton. He says, would you like to go along? I looked at him. I said, yeah, I like to go up for a little pastime. So I went up and I pitched the game and won it. So there's nothing said anything about that, no praise or anything. The same thing happened next week.
And you won again.
Now, Herb come back the next week, same thing. We were sitting at the dining table. And after a while, we got through talking. He said, you'd like to have a catch again, huh? I said, all right. So we go up for about 15 minutes to warm up, you know, the catcher. So we come back, and he didn't say that more. Right? So he come back Saturday. He says, we have another ball game. He says, this is down Terrytown, New York. He says, would you like to go on? I said, yeah, I'd like to go. This boring to you?
No, it's wonderful.
All right. So we have a game downtown down here. Would you like to go along? I said, yeah. So I pitched the game down there and won it. Well, this is where the excitement starts comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Wall Street Broker lived in the same town with me, and he knew me. And he went up to the Yankee Stadium twice a week to see the ball game. And he knew the manager pretty well, Hal Chase.
Mm-hmm.
He was the manager. So he said, I have a nice ball player up in Austin, and I'd like to bring him down for a tryout. Chase says, bring him down. So I went down and met the manager. And the manager called over one of the regular ball catchers. He says, take this young fella down there and warm him up for 15 minutes. So the catcher came over and took me down. So he came back and reported to the manager. He must have reported I was pretty good. So the manager came over to me and said, you come tomorrow morning and practice the regular players. I come down. Well, and nothing said. He says, then he came over the next day and said, you come down tomorrow. I said, all right. So the third day, things started to happen. He said, you see that you see that locker over there? Your uniform's in there.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you put that on and come out with the regular ball players. So I did, and we went out and practiced, and I helped the pitcher. So to the, you know, in the practice, they have practice before the game starts.
Little pepper game.
And a hitting practice, and I was helping the pitcher out there on the mound. So then the game started, and I sat on the bench with the regular pitcher. And our best pitcher, Russ Ford, he was pitching the game. He was pitching a good game for a while. So about the seventh, eighth inning, he was getting tired. I was sitting on the bench there. He said, we have to take Russ out. He get tired out. He says, you go out there and take his place.
Hal Chase said that to you.
Hal, the manager, said, you go out there and take his place. Well, I went out, and I wasn't a bit nervous.
You weren't nervous at all?
So, no, some of these ballplayers shaking. I went out there just calm as a cool cucumber. So I went out there. And the greatest battle in baseball... The greatest battle in baseball was up was a left-hand hitter. And I didn't know who he was. I never seen him.
And you were playing the Tigers.
Yeah. Detroit Tigers, yeah. And so the catcher came out. We got our signs together, you know, baseball signs.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, whatever it is. Curveball, fastball, slider. So we got our signs together, and I got 2 strikes on the batter. He fouled him off, you know, foul ball. He hit the ball and fouled off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got 2 strikes on him. And the pitcher and the catcher called for a pitch out on the next pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And I pitched outside. We thought he'd go for it for the second play, you know. He did go after it. So he looked at it. The third strike, the catcher called for a curveball. I'm a left-hander. And I throwed him an overhand fast curveball like that. And it started right at you, like you're the batter.
Uh-huh.
I started right at you, and the ball curved right over the plate.
For strike three.
He never got the bat off his shoulder. The umpire says, strike three, you're out. And this batter picks up his bat, walks back to the bench talking to himself. The next morning, I picked up the New York Journal paper and the sporting page. Big red headline. Huff's strikes out type cup. And I don't know. I almost passed out.
You almost passed out.
Greatest baseball player in the world.
You bet. And you didn't even know that he was up to bat?
I didn't know until next morning who he was.
Lord.
I didn't know when he was at bat. I never seen him.
And the catcher didn't.
My first game in baseball.
And the catcher didn't even tell you who was at bat and where to pitch to him
he
or anything?
We only had signs.
Yeah.
He didn't know who the batter was.
Now, in those days, the Yankees were called the Highlanders.
At that time, yeah.
Uh-huh. And you played at the Polo Grounds.
Yeah, I played at the Polo Grounds.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And,
that's true.
And they didn't have fences. They just had kind of a rope or something to keep the fans off the field.
We had an enclosed field. Uh-huh. Nobody could get in.
Nobody could get in.
We had enclosed field. Mm-hmm. Highlanders. Polo Grounds is all closed in.
Mm-hmm.
Polo Grounds. Did you ever see the Polo Grounds?
Yes, I did.
Uh-huh. Well, what part of the country are you from?
Kansas.
Okay.
From Kansas.
Well, that's where I finished up in baseball.
In Kansas?
Kansas City, 1918.
Kansas City Blues in the American Association?
That's right, the Blues in the American Association. I retired in 1918 out of baseball. The war was so bad. There's nobody in the grandstand but soldiers in uniforms. Huh? And they had to close up July 1st.
So you ended up in Kansas City in AAA baseball.
Triple A, that's what I finished my career.
In 1918.
1918, my career, yeah.
I'll be. Well.
And I had to go back and get a job. This was the interesting part. I'll tell you about this. I shouldn't go continue, but I will.
Okay.
You see, when I retired, I went with Rand McNally and Company. I worked for them, and I continued in baseball 10 years after I retired up there. I worked for Rand McNally 40 years.
As a map maker.
Map and Atlas Company, you know,
yes,
publishers.
Yes, indeed.
You've heard of them.
I have used their maps and books a long time.
Maps and everything, books and everything. Well, mm-hmm. I worked 40 years there as a chief stock cutter after I got out of baseball.
Mm-hmm. In Chicago?
Their main office is in Chicago, but they had a big factory in my hometown, Ossining.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And I worked there 40 years. I walked back and forth. 15-minute walk back and forth.
Now, you played for the St. Louis Browns also, didn't you?
1915.
With Branch Rickey.
Branch Rickey.
Now, I heard that he was the greatest ball player ever.
He was there.
He was better than Ty Cobb and Babe Ruth and Honus Wagner.
Who?
Branch Rickey.
Branch Rickey, he didn't know how to play ball.
Oh. He was a good manager.
He was a manager, he was a religious player, and he wouldn't show up on Sunday to the ball game.
He wouldn't?
No. Well, that's all I can tell you now.
Uh-huh.
That's a good part one, I guess. Yeah. I'm tired out.
Okay. Well, I understand. And, of course, you played with George Sisler, too. You played with George Sisler.
George Sisler and I come up the same day. Yeah.
He played first base for the St. Louis Browns.
He came up as a pitcher. And they made a first baseman out.
That's right.
That's right.
He's just.
You know some baseball too.
he was right up there with Cap Anson and Lou Gehrig.
Yeah. And
you struck out Shoeless Joe Jackson when he was with the White Sox, and with Cleveland.
Yeah, the Black Sox.
Yeah, in 1919. When you played in the American Association, did you go by bus?
Well, I finished up in July 1st, 1918.
Mm-hmm.
Kansas City, that's where I finished up.
Mm-hmm.
And I never went back into the majors again. But I did continue baseball 10 years after that in the semi-pros. That's how I learned my trade, playing ball.
As a semi-pro ball player.
I played semi-pro ball 10 years after I got out of the majors so I could learn my trade there. And I forgot all that about that baseball.
Yeah.
Out of baseball. The war was so bad, it was terrible.
And were you married when you played in the major, when you played with the Highlanders? Were you married then?
No.
You got married after you got out of baseball?
No, I married while I was in baseball. Well, I was in 3 years in baseball before I got married.
What was your wife's name?
My Eva.
Eva?
My first daughter's name's Eva, too.
And did she come from your same hometown? Your wife come from the same hometown as you did?
My wife?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Eva?
I went away 3 years before I married her.
Oh, that's grand.
And so I had to do it. I didn't have no trade. I didn't have nothing. I was just out of school. Now I had to get some money. I had to get married.
Well, how much did you get paid for when you played with the Highlanders? How much did they pay you a month?
The best I got was $450 a month.
That was good pay.
Big pay in them
days.
That's
a lot of money.
I had a lot of money in them days. If you had to work, you only get $20 a week. You had to work in a store around town somewhere, you couldn't get that pay.
No.
$20 and $25 was a big pay a week.
You bet.
So I was glad I did baseball.
Well, in those days, Babe Ruth didn't even get that kind of money when he played with the Red Sox.
Babe Ruth.
Yeah, I bet he didn't even make that kind of money.
Babe Ruth. Yeah, and when he got in the Red Sox, he made that money.
Oh, did he?
He came up in the minors, through the minors.
He played with Baltimore,
He played against Rochester. He played against me in Rochester.
You played in the International League, Rochester, and Baltimore was in...
I played there. That's where I went to St. Louis Brown from Rochester, you know.
Uh-huh.
1915.
Did you play in the old Sportsman's Park in St. Louis with the Cardinals? Was that Sportsman's Park? Was that the name of it in St. Louis?
Sportsman's Park. I thought, no. There was two teams there.
Yeah, the
The Browns. I played with the Browns.
But they played in the same ballpark that the Cardinals played in.
Yeah, Sportsman's Park.
Yeah.
Yeah, they played when the Cardinals away, the Browns played on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Then when the Cardinals were back on, the Browns would be on the other field.
What kind of ball glove did you have? Was it a very small one, just a very small mitt?
We used to have standard gloves. Now they have oversized gloves.
Yeah, they got them real big.
Yeah. Sometimes they get messed up, the ball gets stuck in there, and you can't make your play.
That's right.
Sometimes you say, oh, they have a double play, and they can't make it.
Uh-huh.
The ball sticks in the glove, they can't get it.
Can't find
when
it.
When I was playing ball, they couldn't. They had to use two hands to play baseball. You use one hand, they'd fire it.
That's right. Now they just kind of...
catch them one hand now, but they miss a lot, too, on the infield.
And I guess you played against Tris Speaker when he played with the Cleveland Indians.
That's right.
And one of the greatest center fielder of his day.
Tris Speaker was the greatest center fielder I ever seen.
What made him so great?
He was fast in the outfield. He had a good eye, and he could cover a lot of ground, right or left.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a great hitter, around 300 all the time.
Uh-huh.
He's the best center fielder I've ever seen.
Now, Mr. Hoff, I want to ask you a question now. Did you ever throw a spitter?
No, I'll tell you the truth. I never tried a spitter.
You never tried it?
No.
You never? There was one pitcher I heard in your days that he would lick the ball, and one of the guys on the other team put some red-hot liniment on it,
yeah.
And he started licking it. And he got gaggy, and they had to take him out of the game. Now, so you never threw a spitter?
I used to go up this way, get the cold, warm the hand up, and I never threw the spitter.
You never threw the spitter?
Yeah.
Okay. You didn't try to scratch the ball on the your spikes or something and get a little dirt in it?
I threw the emery ball, yeah.
You had a little emery there stuck in your ball glove?
Yeah, a little piece of emery and just rub it up and make the emery ball through.
Yeah, nice. And in your day, it was called the dead ball. When you played with the Highlanders and the Browns, it was called the dead ball.
That's right.
Was it really heavier, or what was it?
It wasn't dead. It was a lively ball, but it's nothing like this ball today. They hit a lot of home runs. Look at the home runs Babe Ruth hit on a dead ball.
I know.
They was never named a dead ball. They still had a light, baby. Look at the home runs Babe Ruth made it.
Yes, that's right.
On the ball. There's no such thing as a dead ball.
Well, wasn't the inside of it different from what it is? Today it's a cork, and wasn't it different?
Today is a solid rubber ball on the inside. The other time it used to be a cork ball about that size.
Uh-huh.
About that size, solid rubber. Today.
And you're a ball bat.
Uh-huh.
Now, how heavy of a bat did you use? Now, you had to, that was before a designated hitter, so you had to get up there at bat. What size bat did you have?
Just one more, that's all.
Okay.
In the International League in 1915 for the pitcher, I was the best hitter in the whole league over all ball players. I hit 406. That's it.
Wow.
I'm tired.
Okay. Well, we will stop now, Mr. Hoff, and thank you for talking about this for the Hall of Fame.
If you have any copies or anything, I'd be like to get a...
I'm going to make copies. I'm going to make copies for your two children. And I'm going to mail them to you so
you
that
mail them to me.
I will mail them to you, and then you can give them to your two daughters.
That's right.
Okay?
That's right. I'll take care of them.
And the master copy will go to the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
And you will hear from Mr. Guilfoyle a letter and a phone, and I'll give him your phone number so he can call you.
You call me up to Virginia, and I'll take the message.
Okay.
I'm glad you came. I'm glad I could help you out a little bit.
Well, thank you very
much. It takes over 2 hours, the whole story, I guess. That's a good...